Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome back to Renee's Heart to Heart. This is Renee. Happy Veterans Day for those of you out there who have stepped up to the plate, and your families who have also stepped up to the plate to say goodbye to somebody who is away from them for some time, months, even years at a time, to fight for our country. You have great value, great, great value. And it doesn't seem to matter what you do or where you are. It's the fact that you're willing to go and do it that counts for me. So thank you. Lots of celebrations all over our neck of the woods today. It's been on the news all morning. Several restaurants are buying dinner for veterans, and it's been on Channel 5 or NBC all day today. On the Today Show, they're interrupting with the commercials and announcing that you can have free dinner all over town, all kinds of different restaurants. So have a great day, all of you. Today is Bullies to Buddies Day, and as I was reading through the workbook, I thought to myself, we've talked so much about the behavior of our children, the behavior of us, the fact that most bullies, at any rate the personification of a bully, is being bullied someplace else. That's been proven and observed on several occasions. So the age-old question is, why can't we all just get along? And that's a good question, isn't it? I mean, I don't, for me, it's easy. If we rub each other the wrong way, if it's really through nothing you've done to me or nothing I've done to you, but we're just not each other's cup of tea, that's okay. So we don't live together. We don't get married. We don't have dinner together. Choices. It's not about blindly loving your neighbor, but it is about respect and consideration for other people's feelings, thoughts, beliefs, etc. So Izzy has some interesting things in the workbook that talk about what we believe is supposed to be. And some of us are very, our minds, instead of having several paths that we can follow, we have more of a rigidity, and we only see one road in front of us, and we stay on that even when it gets unbelievably bumpy, and even when we see a path that goes off in another direction, we're unable to walk that other path. For reasons that are beyond me, and despite all the conjecture that you read about and hear other people talk about, I don't think we know why somebody chooses to live the way they do when they could make their life a lot easier just by turning off the road they're on. So I thought today we would talk about some of the things that Izzy put in the book about money, about jealousy, all the things that make us do things that we inevitably regret. So let's bring in Shell. Good morning. How are you?
Doing real good, Rainey. How are you doing, sweetheart?
I'm good. It was funny because I was looking through the book, and of course the Facebook and the news is all about, you know, Veterans Day, and you see the you see the pride in so many people in what they write about veterans, what they say. There's a very touching story this morning on the Bush family. Jenna Bush is a guest on the Today Show now on a regular basis, and her father wrote a book about his father, Jenna's grandfather. And it's very touching, and it's very, he calls the book a love story. And he talks about what a wonderful father he was and how all he ever wanted was to make a difference. Mm-hmm. And indeed, I think with all the contradictions that we read and see and everything, anybody who steps up to the plate deserves some recognition, don't you think, Shelley? Anybody? I mean, that's a big job. That's a big responsibility. And they have all made mistakes. I don't know how you could single out one being a whole lot better or a whole lot worse than another. The job in itself, President of the United States of America, is quite a trial. So, you know, but watching all of this and then reading parts of the book, towards the back of the book when Izzy's trying to really teach the teachers, so to speak, he talks about the psychology in civilization, and he talks about power, and he talks about the difference between living in civilization or living in nature. And he has a feeling or a thought that, you know, they don't usually cohabitate, but it would be better if they did. So how do you feel about when we talk about the bullying, when we talk about people being hateful and mean to others, when we talk about let's take out the worst of the worst, let's take out the people who are totally mentally unsound and do horrible crimes because they're just on disconnect. Let's forget about them. Let's talk about the everyday people that struggle with jealousy, with coveting other people's happiness and other people's stuff, and the how that, it's not just that they act out, it's what it does to them inside. If you are always pissed because you don't drive as nice a car as your sister, what does that do to you? If you are always angry because all your friends seem to have better jobs than you, what does that do to you? If you are always jealous because your best friend, every time you go someplace, she or he gets all the attention and everybody seems to like them better, what are you like inside when you cannot come to grips with who you are and not have all this anger and jealousy and frustration because you're not who you think you should be? How do you feel about that? Shall?
Yeah, my phone went into searching mode again. Sorry. Every now and then I have to press this button on here and it goes, it says searching, and then all of a sudden the signal comes back. So I lost you there.
Did you hear my question, Shell? She must be gone again. Okay. So I'm going to explain to you what Izzy's got in the book.
Oh, boy. Happened again. Sorry. I might have to call back on the cell. That keeps happening. I don't know why it's happening.
Okay. All right. Well, let me know. I'll see you go off if you have to call. So did you hear what I asked you, or shall I just move on?
Oh, no, it went blank just as you went to say that.
Okay. What I was asking you is, you know, how do you feel about the people that can't deal with being, well, in essence, who they think they should be or who they want to be? And instead of honing in on that, and concentrating on, if they're not happy with who they are, changing it and taking responsibility, they get angry with other people because the other people are doing what they think they should be able to do, or having what they think they should be able to have, or loving who they think they should be loving. All those things that people don't embrace with other people, even friends, even family. I see it with everybody.
Well, there's a reason why, and this is something that became very clear in this course I've taken. Over the last several years, I've taken a lot of courses dealing with success, money, personal responsibility, things like that. And there's a reason why 97% of the wealth, now listen to that number, 97% of the wealth in the world is held by 1% of the population, maybe 2%, but between 1% and 2%. So out of 7 billion people, you're talking thousands that have the wealth. So, and there's a reason for that, because most people are not willing to be self-responsible, and that's the biggest difference. The difference between somebody over here, and it's, you know, people look at millionaires and they say, oh, well, they must have inherited it, or they were, you know, born with a silver spoon in their mouth and things like that. And they say things disparaging like that because there has to be a reason why that person got that money or has that nice car or has that good relationship that has nothing to do with their efforts. It just, it's unfair and it fell into their lap. And I've seen this pervasive attitude.
Yeah, she cut out again. Shell, you're going to have to call me in on your other phone because you keep cutting out. Okay, well, and I know that that's true, what Shelley just said, that there's a very, very small minority of our world that, you know, is incredibly wealthy. We didn't hear any of that, so you're going to have to call in on your other phone. You cut out for the last, 20 seconds.
Okay, let me call back in on the cell.
Okay. So, but here's, Izzy has the definition of money, how we store power over people. Money is the way we convert our labor into potential form so that it can be stored and used to get others to labor for us. Money has no other purpose. Attractive coins can be used as jewelry, but then it's not being money. Paper money can be used as toilet paper or for heating, but that is foolish unless inflation has incredibly devalued the money. Even then, when you buy a sack of earth, you are not paying Mother Nature for the sack of earth. You are paying other people for taking the earth from the ground and delivering it to you. You do not pay cows for their milk or chickens for their eggs. Interesting concept. Are you back? I've clicked you in.
Yes, I'm back.
Yeah. Okay. Modern civilization cannot exist without money. Money is to civilization what blood is to our bodies. In fact, one of the ancient Hebrew words for money is the same word as blood, damim. If money were suddenly to stop existing, most of us would die because it would be impossible to keep food and other necessities of life flowing to 6 billion people through barter. An age-old saying tells us money is the root of all evil. Most people don't understand this saying. We believe that bad people use money in an evil way, but that we ourselves don't. Why is money the root of all evil? Because it makes it simple for humanity to deceive itself about human nature. In other words, to be hypocrites. It allows us to pursue power over people while denying to ourselves that we're doing it. Most people feel comfortable acknowledging that they would like to make more money and to pay less for goods and services. They have no idea that they are trying to increase their power over people while denying to ourselves that we're doing it. Most people feel comfortable acknowledging that they would like to make more money, but they have no idea that they're trying to increase their power. Both of those paragraphs are exactly the same. They are trying to hurt others to their own benefit and aren't even aware of it. So we are being bad while we think we are being good, and we do it without our conscience bothering us. If we want humanity to be more moral, we should be teaching children from the earliest ages that money is power over people. they won't be able to lie to themselves and each other about the meaning of money, and are more likely to be considerate in how they earn it and spend it. So part of the lesson that he's trying to teach us here is the fact that we do have to talk to the kids about money. Now, most of us, when we talk to the kids about money, most families that I am related to, affiliated with, friends with, etc., I mean, I know some very wealthy people, but I don't remember them dealing with it any different. It is to be respected, money, and it is to be coveted, quite honestly. And if you want to be successful, then you have to work hard to get it. That's what most people teach their kids about money. Societies that live under the barter system are more moral than money-based societies because the people can't disguise what it is that they are trading with each other. Read the book and watch the documentary, Ancient Futures, learning from Ladakh. I never can say these Jewish words or these Hebrew words.
Ladakhi,
right, yeah, by Helena Norberg Hodge. You will see clearly how their change from barter to money had a destructive effect on the Ladakhi society. There's a quote, "We are all murderers and prostitutes, no matter to what culture, society, class, nation one belongs, no matter how normal, moral, or mature one takes oneself to be." I hope that's not true, but it probably is. What he's talking about and what I think we need to understand when we talk about bullying, whether we're talking about sixth grade or the office, it's probably even more prevalent in the office, but it's also a part of what happens in school. Who's the kid that gets picked on the most? The one that's not wearing something that everybody else is wearing, right? I mean, they get ostracized from the get-go. If they don't have on the sneakers that everybody's parents have scraped and saved, because it doesn't mean that they're rich. It just means mom and dad figured out a way to get them. So they've got on the $100 sneakers like everybody else, but the kid that's wearing the $40 sneakers that mom bought at Walmart gets ostracized. So that's about stuff and money. The kid that comes in to school in hand-me-downs, or the kid that just isn't wearing what everybody finds acceptable, they're the most ostracized when you talk about bullying or not being accepted to a group of people. They're the worst. Back when I went to school, if I had a girlfriend whose mother made her clothes, I would have to stick up for her all the time because she'd get, "Your mother made that for you? Oh, you know. Isn't it embarrassing to tell everybody that your mother makes your clothes?" That's what girls would say to this girl. So it is this part of the bullying or the rudeness to others also exists in the workplace. That's why schools started doing uniforms. That's why places of real productivity, where they didn't want to put up with all this nonsense, makes everybody wear a uniform there. The same kind of work shoes, the same kind of pants, the same kind of smock or shirt or logoed T-shirt or dress shirt or whatever, just to stop that, because it even exists with us 50-year-old people. And it's a big part of the bullying.
Right, right.
So he talks about two basic ways of having power over people. Number one is the stick. Getting people to support us by hurting them and keeping them afraid of us. Now, we know a lot of people that do that. We know a lot of people that are in real positions of power that do that. I mean, we watched that the last few weeks with the nurse that Chris Christie in New Jersey got. I mean, he was angry with her, and he said on national TV, of course, he gets in trouble for putting his foot in his mouth all the time, but he said, "I have to worry about everybody, not just her." But there was still a way to take care of her that wasn't with a stick.
Exactly.
So we see this all the time, right?
Yep.
I mean, it's a part of our everyday life. He says number two is the carrot, getting people to support us by giving them what they want and making them feel good. Now, why couldn't Chris Christie...
making it seem you're giving them what they want.
Exactly.
And, you know, people get very... almost naive, I guess you could say. You know, every time you hear the politicians, they make all these promises, you vote for somebody, doesn't come out the way you wanted it to, and then the next time you're counting on what the politicians are saying again. I mean, if you kept a track record on the on the speeches that they give while they're campaigning and then what actually happens after the fact, you would find that really no politician ever lives up to what they say they're going to do.
Mm-hmm.
It's just kind of the nature of the game, and that's what it is. It's a game.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that's true. And plus that, because you can't, unless you've done the dance before, you don't know the steps. You
right.
really don't. So it's almost worthwhile. I was thinking to myself the other day, what would I do if somebody came to me and said, Renee, what can we do to make our politicians, less of this horrible behavior that we've witnessed the last 6 months before this recent election? What would you do? And the only thing I could think of was to have groups of people again, to have groups of people literally hold the one post instead of one individual. And I thought to myself, would that work? You know, I mean, would it really work? And then I thought to myself, no, they would either be real, real strong people and take over everybody because there's power in numbers, or they would fight amongst themselves and there would never be the one person, because ultimately, no matter how I broke it down in my mind and compared it to different things that I've done in my own lifetime, one person has to have the answer. And sadly, I don't know how else you can get around that. The thing that they've done is they've written all the rules and the laws and the legislation, and you can't do this unless you say you want to do it, then we vote on it, and then we put it before these people, and then we put it before those people. So they're trying to do that now, but it's still too, I don't know. It depends too much on the whims of sometimes the wrong people and what, I don't know why it doesn't work. It's frustrating to me, though, because it seems like it should.
I'll tell you why it doesn't work. One of the reasons it doesn't work, and this is going to sound very controversial, I apologize for that, but I'm just going to put it out there as food for thought for people, okay? What I've learned in the past, well, what actually started in 1998, that's when I really learned that the FTA is really not protecting us, that it's really each person's individual responsibility to not blindly follow what a guy in a white coat is telling you to do, but to actually start educating yourself minimally on how the body works, how the body heals itself. All right, that's something that most people aren't willing to do. They say they don't have the time, they're working too hard, blah, 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 whatever. They don't want to get involved in it. They're just going to trust this doctor and blindly follow what he says. We've actually been culturized, taught to think that other people are responsible of dictating how we make choices. This is done by design so that, what I said a few minutes ago, so that this 1 or 2% of the world's population maintains control of the wealth. One of the things that was talked about in this course I just took, and I've sort of known this, but it's not the first time I've heard this concept, is that there is no shortage of money. You know, people keep saying money's tight, jobs are tight, blah, blah, blah. No. Money is not tight. The wealthy are getting wealthier. If money was tight, the wealthy would be struggling along with us. Why are wealthy people getting wealthier? I mean, whether anybody agrees with me or not, it's a fact, okay? It's something, if you follow any of the financial papers, if you follow any of the financial shows, this is a fact. Wealthy people are getting wealthier. So there's not a shortage of money. what there's a shortage of in this country, and basically worldwide, but it's really bad in the United States, is people who understand how money works. That's the problem. People who understand how the body heals itself. That's the problem. We are not taught in school the realities behind the most critical things that affect us, which is our health and how money works. And that is by design, because the very, very wealthy people want to be able to maintain a workforce that will not rival them, that will not question them. And if this sounds like a conspiracy theory, it's not a conspiracy theory. It is actually quite factual. And there are books out there written by scholars, by financial scholars, by people that are extremely educated about this and have brought this to light. So, but the bottom line is, it's not something that should make you angry. When I first realized this, when I was healing myself, I got angry at first because I felt like I had been deceived for 30 years. And when I took responsibility for my own health and healing and started just reading some basic books, I mean, I didn't go to college for 2 years. I literally read 4 books. I'm not kidding. I read 4 different books. Back in 1997, and in 1998, I changed my life forever. And then I continued researching, and by now I've probably read 30 books. But when you think about what I did with very minimal effort, you know, you don't have to go to college and learn how the body works. I read some basic information, and it changed my mindset, and it put me in a position of taking responsibility. Now, 15 years later, I'm doing the same thing with money. Now I'm being re-educated about how money works, because anybody can use the tools and techniques of the wealthy and rich and gain more financial control over their lives, get in the driver's seat, and not be on a boat out on the water without a sail and just going whichever way the wind takes them, or in the back of a dirty bus that somebody else is driving, and they don't know where they're being taken on. They're just going to be periodically dropped off here and there. I want to be driving my car. I want to have a sail on my sailboat with a rudder so that I can direct where I'm going. So that's one of the things that causes so much jealousy, so much anger. It's the dissatisfaction and this sense of no control over your lives. It's the underlying reason why people are unhappy today. And it's scary to take responsibility, because then you only can point the finger in one direction. If things don't work out, it's because of me. And if things do work out, it's because of me. The upside to taking responsibility is that if it is your responsibility and you try something and it doesn't work, guess what? Try something else. Keep putting the effort out there. And because it took me 2.5 years to finally go through all the trial and error and kind of be on a forward path of getting my health on track. It didn't happen overnight. But I could see little improvements here and there, and I kept moving forward. One of the things we learned, and I had heard this before, but I learned so much this week, and like I told you, I feel like my brain is swollen. You know, but there are so many structures in place that the common person isn't taught about in school. And it's almost like it's secrets that the wealthy don't want shared with the common person. Mitt Romney made a comment, Warren Buffett made a comment a couple years ago, and he got himself in big trouble for saying it, but it's the truth, that now Warren Buffett is one of the wealthiest men on the planet. He's one of the billionaires. And, you know, when you talk about lack of money, do you realize that there's over 1,000 billionaires in the world? So there's not a lack of money. There's a lack of people that know how to get money into their lives. Mitt Romney made a comment that he pays less in taxes than his secretary. It's because he knows how to work with money. You've always heard about these real estate deals where you can buy houses without using a dollar of your own money. Well, that was one of the things we learned this weekend. It is possible. And as you get more into it, then you will start using your own money. But there is a way of starting in real estate investing and using other people's money in the beginning to get started with until you've built up enough capital of your own, and then you can then go into investor mode. But there's a way of entering that investor arena even if you don't have a dime of your own money. And this is something the wealthy know. That's why Trump was able to go bankrupt twice and reamass his wealth almost immediately, because he knows how money works. To him, going bankrupt was a game. And to very,
yeah.
very wealthy people, money is a game. And that's one of them. And I had heard this like 15 years ago for the first time, actually longer, because I had taken a cash flow course. This was well before I started working on my health. This was like probably maybe 20 years ago. And that was the first time I ever heard the concept that for wealthy people, money is a game. And not all wealthy people. This is an important thing to remember. Not all wealthy people started out wealthy. Some wealthy people started out like us. They grew up poor.
Of course. There's a lot of people like that. Of course.
You know?
I think that everybody understands that. But we're getting a little bit away from we'll do a show so that you can really talk about the money issue. I just want to keep money in perspective to what today's show is about. And money is one of the reasons that people get so jealous. And money is one of the reasons that people actually lose friends and lose family members. It's well known that when a matriarch anybody in a family who's holding the purse strings passes away, a family gets pulled apart by who gets the money and who doesn't get the money and all the other stuff that goes with it. But
yeah, we've seen that happen.
What I really... Yeah, it's shocking, and the families that it happens to, it's shocking, because you don't think that, you know, you think that they really love each other more than that, but it's about the jealousy, and sometimes it's greed, but more often than not, it's people are afraid that somebody else is getting more than they are, and everybody feels like it's supposed to be more fair than that.
But think about this. People say money is the root of all evil. That's actually a misquote. It's the lust of money that is the root of all evil, not money. Money is not good or bad. Money is just energy. And when you look at it, and that this isn't some this isn't some like spiritual verbiage or anything, but the truth is, money is just energy. Money is the purest form of energy because it can be exchanged for anything. It can be exchanged for property. It can be exchanged for situations. It can be exchanged for travel, for pay. It can be exchanged for anything. So money is just pure energy. It's what people do with it or do to get it that can be evil or good. So money in and of itself is neutral. It's the person's mindset towards money that can be very, think about people that get money and set up foundations and do just wonderfully philanthropic things with it. That's one of the things I learned, and again, we'll talk about it another time. But my point is that money is not evil. It's our concept of what we are willing to do to get it. Are we going to rob a store to put money in our pocket? Are we going to work 60 hours a week at our job? Are we going to look to invest? You see what I'm saying? So it's our mindset of how we're going to get money that's either good, neutral, or evil.
Mm-hmm. Okay. But I don't necessarily disagree with that, but I that's kind of what I just read from what Izzy said. You know, he's trying to explain the fact that, you know, when you buy milk, you're not giving the money to the cow. You're giving the money to the person that owns the cow when you, et cetera, et cetera. So, but the idea that he has is that if we could learn to live in nature, our power was based on personal strength and talents at the moment. We needed a personal ability to get others to want to serve us, both through the carrot and the stick. Use of the stick was very important in nature because might makes right. Personal power declines as our strength and talents decline. He talked about the living in civilization and living in nature on the show one day. And it intertwines on several different on several different levels. But in our civilization today, money is the connection to everybody. even people that you never lay eyes on. You connect with them through your money. You put money in the bank. The money that you put, the cash that you put in the bank, or the check that you put in the bank, touches the hand of however many people until it gets processed, and then cash flow starts from it, et cetera, et cetera. So it's a connection. Money is a big connection for everybody. But the problem with the way we behave is the fact that we can't get past other people looking at face value, like they're doing better, having more fun, more well-adjusted, happier, period, than we are. And then that invokes a jealousy, a green-eyed monster that really, really, really is a monster and can make you do foolish, foolish things. Every day when I watch the news and when I look on the internet to see what stories are happening, I read absolutely horrific things, things that make me lose sleep at night. And then I'll come across one thing that, like, gives me hope that we're still all right, that we haven't evolved into some money monsters or stuff monsters or material monsters. And today, an accident. A guy plows into somebody else, takes off running after he hits them, and drives his car into the water. And the person that he hit saved his life.
Wow.
The person that he ran into left his car, saw what happened, left his car, ran over, and rescued the man that went into the water. So
we have an instinct.
Yes, it's a beautiful story. And thank God, because everything else that I've looked at for the last 2 days gave me a stomachache. So then I hear this story, and I thought, you know, to the powers that be, thanks for sending that my way, because I really needed that. I really, really needed to hear that we are still, there's still some humanity out there. Then when I thought about doing this, because I feel like we're all guilty of this, on different levels, guilty of this coveting of someone else's happiness, the fact that we can't get past that somebody else, not just that they have more, but they're happier than we are.
But I don't agree with that, Renee, because I've never experienced that in my entire life. I've seen people that had things that I wanted and felt bad for myself that I didn't have those things, but I never felt bad for the person that had something I wanted. I never went through that. That's why I have such a hard time wrapping my brain around jealousy or coveting and things like that. Because I've never experienced that emotion. It doesn't make sense to me. Why would you begrudge somebody else for having something that you want? I mean, they didn't do anything wrong to get it, you know, unless they're a bank robber or somebody. But
I don't think it's done with intent, Shell. It's not done with intention.
But I've never experienced it. So you can't say we're wrong there, because I haven't. And I know at least one other person that hasn't, a friend of mine. It's just an emotion that I've never entertained, and it actually confuses me, because I know most of my friends and other people in my family, I've seen it in them, but it's something that I can't be the only person who doesn't feel that way. I don't think everybody feels jealousy. I don't think everybody, I think it's very common. I think most people do. But I'm just saying, not everybody does. I never went there. I've never gone there.
That's a verbatim word. You know, when you say everybody, you're talking in the largest multitude. Obviously, we're all different, and the way I feel about some things, you would never, and vice versa. That's not my point. My point is that most of the unkindness that is directed to each other stems from those kind of emotions, jealousy, greed, the inability to understand why somebody has and you have not. And it invokes poor behavior. It invokes bullying. It invokes difficult workplace scenarios. They make a joke of it on the sitcoms. You know, they make a big joke of it on the sitcoms. Somebody will find out that somebody that just got hired in a lower position than somebody else is making more money. And, you know, they make a big funny story out of it. But it's not funny in the workplace. It isn't funny.
Right.
And it is a part, though, of where all the anger comes from, where all the hatred even comes from. And it's sad because you can change it yourself. It's all about being able to change it yourself.
That's it, exactly.
But it doesn't come first.
No.
That's not the feeling that comes first.
Right. If people could start moving into a place where they felt happiness for somebody who had more than they did, and then looked at how that person got it, that's how a lot of these successful people have gotten where they are, because they didn't go there. They didn't feel bad. They didn't feel hatred towards that person. You hate somebody that drives a Mercedes, guess what? You're never driving a Mercedes, you know? Now, if you look at that person and you say, wow, I think it's unfair they have a Mercedes, I'm going to figure out how to get my own, that's a little different. But when you look at the person and you begrudge them for what they have, you're never going to have it in your own. It's almost like you energetically push it away from you. So for that reason alone, you should try not to entertain those type of thoughts, because if you're thinking it's bad, then how could you ever create it in your own life? Your brain is going to work in a way that's not even going to allow you to create the ability to get that. If you think having a Mercedes is a bad thing, you think you're ever going to own a Mercedes? You know, and we don't realize then when you go to those type of thought processes, you're almost making it impossible for yourself to ever achieve these things in your own experience. So that's one of the reasons why you should not begrudge other people. I mean, this is something we've talked about before. Look at lottery winners. People win the lottery, and then they end up losing half their friends because their friends now are bitter that this person, why did they win and I didn't win? Instead of feeling happy for their friends, I remember, you know, last year I won a small jackpot, you know, about $10,000. It was a lot of fun. Mostly everybody I told were like so excited for me, because this is when I wanted to go to Germany to see my nephew who's in the Air Force. But there were actually two people that found out and got angry. I was shocked. I was not even prepared for that reaction. They literally got pissed off. Instead of saying congratulations to me, they instantly got stiff and were like, oh, well, I've been playing for years. I've never won a dime, and walked away from me. I was like, wow. I was not prepared for that reaction at all. So people are funny when it comes to that, and they're doing
well. Well, and you have to understand, that there are some people that felt that way and pretended not to. You have to understand that, too. That's my whole issue. That's what bothers me the most. People who put up a facade, and then when you walk away, then that's when the anger erupts, because they feel cheated and they feel this. And it's. I wish that I didn't know that much about people, Shelley. I wish that I didn't know that. But I do know that. And I do know that.
Who are they hurting when they do that? Who are they
themselves.
Hurting?
Themselves. That's exactly the whole point. But then once they hurt themselves, then they strike out to hurt somebody else. That's the whole point of what we're talking about today. It's even in school, let's go to a 14-year-old. Let's go to a 14-year-old who because I've listened to this for the last 50-some years. Now I'm listening to it with great-grandchildren. Everybody I know has an Xbox 3. Well, you have an Xbox One, and you can deal with it. Then they go to school, and three or four people say, oh, you don't have an Xbox 3 yet? Oh, Xbox Ones, they suck. You know, this is what snowballs.
Yeah.
This is what snowballs. And then the next thing you know, you got a very, very unhappy kid. Do they understand why they're unhappy? Not really. They just think that they're mad because mom and dad won't get them an Xbox 3 because everybody else has one. Now let's go 25 years later, and you're in the workplace, and you come to work every day, every day. And you never call off sick. You, even if you feel like you're dying, you drag your butt into work. You're committed to your job, right? But you're not really excelling, but you're there every day. You're not really doing anything that makes the company a whole lot better, but you do report to duty every day. Then here comes, Joe Schmo, and he gets hired, and he's going to work right alongside of you. And every night when you're walking out the door, you see Joe Schmo over there. He's still standing there. He's just seen something that's messed up or screwed up, or a guest wants help, or a customer walks in the door at the very end of the day, and you walk away because it's closing time, and Joe Schmo goes over and says, "Can I help you?" And all of a sudden, 6 months later, Joe Schmo is your boss. Because
right.
Joe Schmo is putting in that, he's there. Oh, and you even realize that every now and then he takes a day off. You never do that. What's the deal?
Mm-hmm.
Right? So
right.
Now those 14-year-olds are in an office space, and again, the one who puts forth the X, I tell my kids this all the time, and we've argued about it, especially David, who wants to believe what I say is true, but then he gets slapped in the face all the time. And I said, so did I. I got slapped in the face all the time too, but it's not about the people that wanted to slap me in the face. It's about me. It keeps me happier being this person instead of that face slapper.
Yep.
That's what I want everybody to get. It's the feelings, you can't stop an emotion or a feeling that comes across your mind. It's the acting on it that hurts you. It's the giving it so much credence that you change everything because you believe that emotion. You believe that you really have to have that Xbox 3 when you're 14 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're 35 years old, if you don't really properly assess yourself, you think because you go to work every day and punch the time clock or do whatever it is you do at the workplace, you've never worked on your day off. Joe Schmo has been called in 3 or 4 times on his day off and never thinks twice about coming in. What's the difference between those two employees? One of those people loved their job. One of those people loves their paycheck. That's it. And that's what we have to teach the kids as they're growing up.
Right.
You can't stop the emotion of having a pang of jealousy when your best girlfriend or your best boyfriend or your sister or your brother drives up in a brand new Mercedes-Benz. You get a pang of jealousy. It's normal. Geez, I wish I could have one of those someday, right? But it's being mean to your brother for the rest of the week because he had one that I don't want you to do.
Exactly. Exactly.
That is where so many of the problems come from. And then let's go to the kid that gets picked on because he doesn't have the Xbox 3. What happens to him after he's been picked on long enough? Now he feels like a victim.
Right. Because
everybody's picking on him. So as a victim, he fights back.
Right.
For what? Because everybody picked on him because he doesn't have an Xbox? I mean, put that into perspective. Or in the workplace, now Joe Schmo is the shining star, and Susie Q over here starts talking about Joe Schmo because, she happens to know that, when he stays here late at night, he drinks, maybe they're working in a restaurant, and he has cocktails. So she wants to make sure she gets that around the room. Or tells other stories about him to somehow knock him off of her imagined pedestal that he's standing on. You see how it just like snowballs into such crap.
Right.
But I see it every day.
A lot of that has to do because as a as a society, we've become way too materialized. I mean, when you look at when my mom was growing up, you know, she's like between you and me. You're like in the middle mm-hmm. generation between me and my mom, you know. Mm-hmm. But when my mom was growing up, you know, there were no such things as, even when I was going to school, you know, you didn't have fashion sneakers, you know, everybody wore kids, you know, like $5 kids or whatever. You know, there was some of that going on already. Some kids would come to school in clothes that weren't really, you know, of the time and all that. But they weren't into $100 jeans or $150 sneakers, even when I went to school. That just wasn't prevalent yet, okay? And the way it got prevalent is, and I don't want to put so much on the parents, but it is because of the parents. I was taught by my mom that it didn't matter what everybody else had. She instilled in us that there's always going to be people that are worse off than you. There's always going to be people that are better off than you. The only thing you can do is play with the hand you're dealt and be appreciative for whatever cards end up there and do the best you can with them. And it sounds overly simplistic, but it's not, because it was a mindset that I went forward in life with. So, and sure enough, I've been alert, and I see people that have much, much less than I do and struggle more with either health or property or whatever. And then there's people over here that have 100-fold what I have. And I don't feel sorry for the person that has less, and I don't feel begrudging of the person that has more. I forge forward with what comes into my experience. So, but how many parents feel that materialistic things are so important, and then they translate that to their kids? The kids see them get all stressed out at Christmas time because they're trying to get the money to get this and to get that. And instead of celebrating the holiday for what it was, my mom always kept Christmas very spiritual, you know, not fanatical, but kept it to the essence of what the holiday was about. How many families have lost that? And now it's just a gift-giving thing. If the gift-giving is part of the whole celebration, that's wonderful. If it's a way to celebrate and bring family together. I'm not against gift giving. I think it's wonderful. It's exciting. I used to love waking up Christmas morning and seeing all the presents. But how many families do you know, because I've known several myself, that if they have a lean Christmas, all of a sudden they're devastated, they're depressed. They, instead of making the most of it and giving everybody one present or a smaller present or doing something like, well, let's make presents for each other. We actually did that one year in my family because everybody was struggling. So we said, well, look, everybody's got to make a present, and you can't spend more than $7. That's what we said. So each person only got one present. It had to be made, and you couldn't spend more than it was actually fun. So instead of everybody getting depressed and getting angry and getting bitter during the holidays, we made a thing out of it. We made a family thing out of it, and it actually invoked more of what the spirit of Christmas was all about. But I saw families that were struggling like us, who became angry and depressed and bitter and started taking it out on random strangers because they couldn't go out and buy that $100 thing for their kids or whatever. And the kids saw this, and they became materialistic and bitter as a result. So you can either be an example to your kids of there's going to be times when you're going to have a lot of money, there's going to be times when you have little money, and you know what? You can be happy in either case, depending on how you handle that situation. And I think too many parents today are materialistic, and that's why the kids are going that way. So they're in school, they see one of their classmates not wearing a $100 pair of sneakers, and because their parents are so materialistic, now they're taking an arrogant, snotty attitude towards that kid and belittling them in their own minds. And it almost gives them a license to be unkind to them, because in their heads, there's something wrong with that child. Because now they're not up to par with me. And this is something that I've seen in a lot of teenagers today who aren't taught the value of having a pair of $100 sneakers. They take it for granted, and they almost have the attitude that somebody who can't afford it is lesser than them somehow. And this is one of
that is a big issue, but again, that's something that, you know, parents have to take responsibility for. If they are not with it enough, or maybe they suffer from the same issues and the same problems. But we're almost out of time, and I have a couple things, but I want to summarize a little bit. the reason we did this show today, because it's Bullies to Buddies Day, is because I do believe that a lot of the bullying, a lot of the abuse that we tender to one another has to do with jealousy or coveting someone else's successes, etc. And I don't think that it's done with intent. I don't think if I were to say to somebody, do you know you're doing this, they would look at me amazed and not even know that they had behaved like that and why they behaved like that. I think it's an emotion. In some people, it's almost an instinct to, because they want to be successful, because maybe that happens at home too. You know, if you want something, go out and get it. If you think you should have something, you have to work for it. All these things are good things that we teach our kids and that we try to embrace ourselves. However, when someone else reaches that success before you do, or when someone else has been more successful at their endeavors, then you'll be a happier person. Probably you're not going to bother them at all if we're talking about grown-ups, because they're just happy in what they've been successful at. But if you want to be happier, you're the one who needs to adjust those feelings. You're really not hurting them by being jealous of them.
Right.
You're hurting yourself. You're really not hurting them by coveting what they have, because coveting doesn't give it to you. So
right.
I want everybody to understand that having those feelings and making them make you feel mean is not healthy for you. So if you do see somebody and you think, how in the hell did they manage to do that? Ask them. Ask them. And discuss it with them, and maybe they can help you in your own personal endeavors. But being angry about it is not the answer. And if you're a kid, it definitely isn't, because it can set the tone for how you accept what goes on around you for the rest of your life. So, but I want to mention to everybody that tomorrow we're going to have a conversation with a young woman that I've known for many, many years. She's done an amazing transition with weight loss and moved on and separated from her husband and everything. And she's very, I'm not going to say she's clinically depressed, but she's sad because she can't find Prince Charming. And through the years, I've also met men. One of my very favorites, when he finally quit looking, the best thing that ever happened to him fell into his lap. So I think that first you have to be secure yourself, and then Prince Charming often finds you, and vice versa. But we're going to talk to her tomorrow and have a little discussion about that. And that's what made me think of this today, because our behavior has a lot to do with how happy we think we are. And it's important to be happy with yourself, and it's important to be happy with those around you. So, and I guess that's it for right now. That will be the show tomorrow, and I hope you'll join us. And everybody go out there today, though, and have a great day. And remember what I said about you veterans. If nobody said you had show a card or something, but I think most of you have got your VA cards or something that bona fides the fact that you're a veteran. And there's like 6 or 7 places right in our vicinity here in the West Palm Beach, Delray, Lake Worth. That whole part of well, probably all the way down through would be my guess, but I know about these places are giving dinner to veterans tonight for free. So everybody go out there and have a great day. There's also a parade here today. You can find it online. I forgot to look up the time I was going to and got carried away. So everybody have a great day. God bless, and enjoy this beautiful, beautiful fall weather that we're experiencing here in Florida. Bye-bye. Thanks, Shell.
Thanks, Rainey. I salute all our veterans. Have a wonderful day, and we'll be back speaking to you in the morning.